What's going on in the community? Let's find out with Isaac Resnick.
Welcome. Good morning. A beautiful morning in Johannesburg. A little bit chilly earlier, about 5:30 this morning, but it's going to be warmer later during the day. Now, we have a very, very special guest in the studio this morning. I'll introduce him in a few moments. But as usual, I start off with those, unfortunately, who passed away during the week. And there was Sarah Helen Scher, Ellen Esther Pym, Lawrence Ginsberg, Marion Ellen Putziger, Leora Davis, Bella Harris, Bernice Assefoots, Tamar Levithan, Leslie Handelsman, Isidore Monty Raymond, Goldie Colley, Leah Rake, and Lena Rebecca Kahn. So I want to wish the respective families, Chaim Tovim Arukim, a long and a good life, and may they have no further sorrows. And I want to now mention a very, very special event, and this is really something unique. Today, or tomorrow, Women's Day, is going to be the 75th wedding anniversary of Louis and Minnie Geselter. I'm sure many of you remember them. Louis was very involved with Maccabi South Africa in the 1960s and 70s before they went on Aliyah. But I'm going to talk about Louis and Minnie on my Friday morning show, Reflections of the Past, because then I can go back 40, 50 years ago and tell you the involvement of Louis and Minnie. And also today is also a very special day, a unique day with history of when the atom bomb, the second atom bomb, was dropped over Nagasaki. The first one was 2 days ago on the 6th of August 1946 on Hiroshima, and I'll talk about that a little later on. Now I'm going to welcome into the studio this morning now Gilan Gork, and I'm sure many of you saw the Jewish Report 2 weeks ago. Headline was Mentally Reading and Influencing People. Good morning, Gilan. It's a pleasure having you in the studio, and I want to welcome you, and really this is very, very fascinating because I'm very interested in this, and I want to get a little bit about your background and tell me where, how you got involved, etc.
Sure, it's wonderful to be here, Isaac. Thanks for inviting me.
It's a pleasure. So tell me all how you started and getting involved in this mentally and influencing people. Because I must mention one thing. When I read this, and you see The Mentalist, there's a television series on SABC called The Mentalist. And, of course, it gives you a different impression. It said if it's a case where someone's murdered, then they bring this person in and he's got to try and read and see who murdered him or one thing and another. Yeah. But I'm sure this is a different aspect completely. You don't do that type of thing.
Yeah, well, so the TV show The Mentalist is actually where a lot of people first heard the term mentalist.
Correct.
I've watched a few episodes of that, and I think that his, from what I understand, his character is based on someone who was an entertainer.
Based on someone who was an entertainer and went around professing to have psychic abilities until someone went and killed his family. It's a bit of a terrible twist in the plot. And then, which microphone do you want me? This one over here. All right, so I hope everyone can hear me clearly now. So what happened is that once they came after his family, he then started working for the FBI. And so every episode is where he uses these mental tricks and so on to in psychology to try and catch the person. But the term mentalist is actually quite a broad term. There's no real definition to it. It's actually a bit of a marketing term. Anyone can call themselves a mentalist, but typically it's got to do with stuff with the mind. So you get some great mentalists who do stuff with memory. And they can remember hundreds of people's names in one sitting and where they lived and so on. You get other mentalists who are brilliant with maths, so they'll do amazing things. And then for me, my specialty is reading and influencing people. And that term kind of stuck with me from my early days when I started off doing shows and stuff demonstrating this.
Right. So we have something in common. You like reading. What do you read? What do you read? And I'll tell you what I'm involved in.
In terms of actual books, I read. When I say read, half of it is audio books, 3 to 4 books a month. And it will be anything from psychology. I love getting my hands on a good psychology book. I read a lot of stuff on the latest research in nonverbal communication, which includes things like body language. I enjoy reading business books. I read a lot of leadership books because leadership and influence are the same thing. And so I read a lot of those. I don't read much fiction. Sadly, I wish I had the time to, and I would like to read a few more biographies. I don't get to many of those either. What about yourself?
Right. I don't read fiction. I only read history and biographies, and I read 4 or 5 books a month.
Wow.
I've just reviewed a book called The Final Solution, which is 3,300 pages.
Pages.
Pages. 3,300. It's all to do with the Holocaust. And when you talk about memory, and I'm not praising myself here, I can remember, I do funerals at the West Park Cemetery. I've been doing it for 40 years or recently sort of slowed down. I can remember every funeral that I've done from 40 years ago. The names of the people, the grave numbers, and who all the people were, the pallbearers were. Mm. And that's over 10,000 funerals.
Wow.
I love history. As I mentioned earlier, today is Nagasaki, and 2 days ago was Hiroshima. And I can recall events, times, places, dates, births from 20, 50, 30 years ago. Mm. And that's why when I spoke to you on the phone, I asked you after you related, there was a Gork family from Cyril Dean, but originally they came from Benoni. And then you said that all the Gorks are related.
Yes.
But now I want to get back to you. You said you went to yeshiva after matric. What yeshiva did you go to?
Well, I went to Mayanot Yeshiva in Jerusalem for about 4 weeks. I had a 5-week trip to Israel, and the last week was a little bit of exploring. And that was a fantastic experience. I learned a lot. It was, you know, just really being immersed in it, having class every day. I packed on a few kilograms walking through the shuk every single morning from the apartment that I was renting nearby, and I'd walk up through the market just as they were delivering the bread. So that was, but it was an amazing, amazing experience. I've still got friends and people who I keep up with today from that, and it was brilliant.
Right. And do you read any of the religious books at all? Sephorim, do you do that, or not at all now?
I used to do a little bit more than what I do now. It goes in cycles for me, if I have to be honest. You know, yeah. Sometimes I'll be more focused on it, and other times I won't.
Right. And history books, do you read history at all?
I used to, during school, I had no interest in history whatsoever, but I find that as I'm growing up and maybe maturing a little bit, I'm really starting to become a lot more interested. And for me, just in terms of the amount of time that I have, I enjoy watching videos and listening to stuff just in little pockets of time.
And so, what about biographies?
I wish I had more time for it. That's one thing, is that there's so many business people and business leaders and leaders of communities and people with amazing, amazing stories and so much wisdom. And that is something that I'd like to read more of. Yeah.
Their biographies, because I love biographies. I've edited about a dozen books.
Really?
On different biographies of different. I'm busy doing one of another very important person here in Johannesburg. I did the edited the book on the late Chief Rabbi Bernard Kasper. I was very involved with Rabbi Rabinowitz. I've written about him. I've written about late Chief Rabbi Harris. I've traveled all over the world, and whoever I meet, that's my motto, by the way, people who meet people are the luckiest people in the world.
Yeah.
And where does that come from? What famous movie?
I have no idea.
Yeah. Came from a movie called Funny Girl with Barbara Streisand.
Right.
And
right.
There was that famous musician called Satchmo, Louis Armstrong. I don't know if you've heard of him or...
Yes, yeah.
And that's where they came from. People who meet people are the luckiest people in the world.
Yeah. You know, that reminds me of the saying that that travel is one of the only things you can do in life where you spend money and you become richer. And I think part of that is to be able to meet people. I think that's part of that experience.
Yeah.
So I agree with you with that. Yeah.
Right. We're going to take an ad break. We'll be back in a few moments.
What's going on in the community? Let's find out with Isaac Resnick.
Welcome back. If you just tuned in, I'm talking to Gilan Gork, well, I'm going to put in inverted commas, mentalist.
Yes.
Right, Gillard, I just want to ask you now, what in your mind is the definition of a mentalist? Because I read something this morning which is completely different. Because in Judaism, we don't believe in that type of thing. We don't accept that.
Yeah.
So what do you think is a mentalist?
Well, if you had to look it up online, for example, probably you came across a definition that had something to do with mind reading, precognition, clairvoyance, all of that stuff, right? These words ring true, right?
Correct.
But that, you know, the best way for me to show you the kind of stuff that I do is for us to do a little experiment. So should we try something quickly?
Yes, yes.
Why not? So, here's what I'd like for you to do. I want you to think of, let's say a 2-digit number.
Right.
If you want to make it interesting, maybe make it something from your phone number, or don't choose zero because every single phone number would have zero in it.
But you
can choose any. I've got a little for those of you who are listening. I think we're recording this as well, so at some point I'll put it on social media as well and share it with you guys. But I want you to think of this 2-digit number. Have you got it in mind?
I've got it already.
Now listen, safe to say, you had no idea we were about to try an experiment. You have no idea what we're about to do. I never said to you beforehand,
correct,
think of any 2 digits or anything like that. You haven't, right? It's just in your mind, right? I want you to think of those, imagine them in your mind, look at me and count out loud from 1 to 9, assuming that you're not thinking of a zero, just from 1 to 9. Go ahead and do that now. Just one, like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Very good. You're quite tough to read, actually, I won't lie. But I'm going to write a little message here for you. Just excuse my handwriting. You will say... Okay, listen, I've written a little message down here for you. For the first time now, and this is the first time you're going to say the number, right? Go ahead and tell us, what is the number that you are thinking of?
1-8.
1-8. Well, of course, because we're on Chai FM and that makes sense, right? But isn't it crazy that I wrote over here, Isaac, well, I just said here, you will say
1-8.
Check it out. Now, you could say that you were influenced because we're on Chai FM and 18 is, you know, for Chai. Or perhaps I read through the way that, through your nonverbal communication, what it is that you were thinking.
Right.
What do you think?
Well, you know what is 8, why I choose 8 or 18 high? Because if we add 8 and 1 is 9.
Okay.
Now, 9 is a number which can never be destroyed. 9 means truth in Hebrew. Now, if you take 9 times 9 is 81. 81, 8 and 1 is 9. Anything multiplied by 9, added by 9, will always come back to 9. Emet, Aleph Mem Tet. That is 9. That's how you get it. Now, Aleph is 1. Mem is 400. That's 401. And Tet is 5. Is 9. That's how I get it. So that's why you were able to do that.
Brilliant. Well, I really love that. I really love that.
Right.
So you can see that what I do not profess to have any kind of psychic powers. I do not profess to have any, there's nothing supernatural or paranormal around what I do. I use a spectrum of skills, and I use the term skills specifically because it's something I've learned. It's not just a gift that I woke up with one day. Anything from psychology, body language, the way that I present things, presentation, if I'm doing something for fun, because half of my work is teaching and half of it is actually just demonstrating for a bit of intelligent entertainment, then obviously I'm going to present it in a way that might look a bit mystical and leave people going, you know, thinking, wow, how the hell? But actually, there's a logical
now,
reason.
Tell me, what is your method of retaining memory, of memorizing what you say? Say, for example, we've just spoken now for the last half hour. Can you recall everything we've just spoken about?
No, I can't. If I want to remember stuff, I don't have a photographic memory. There are two memory systems that I might use. The one is called the PEG system and the other one is called the LINK system. Are you familiar with those terms? Yeah. For those of you listening who are not familiar with it, just in brief, a LINK system is, for example, let's say you're trying to remember a shopping list. you would want to link the different items on that shopping list together in a way that you would never forget. So the most ridiculous pictures that you can imagine. So if the first item on your shopping list is milk and the second is eggs, then what you might imagine is Humpty Dumpty sitting on a wall drinking a carton of milk. Now you've linked milk and eggs together in an image that your mind can actually remember. And let's say the third item is bread. Well, then you might imagine him jumping on a big, massive loaf of bread as if it's a trampoline. So now when you get this crazy image in your mind, you'll be able to remember all those things because you've linked them together in a really memorable way. So that's the link system. And then the peg system is when you peg one idea to another idea that you've already memorized. So some people, for example, will remember a number that would represent a word that would represent numbers from 1 to 10. So, for example, people, and sometimes they'll rhyme it, just remember it. Like they'll say 1 is gun, 2 is shoe, and so on. And they'll remember that. Now, if you had to remember the shopping list and you had to remember eggs, for example, you would know eggs is number 1, so you would imagine it's a gun that's loaded with eggs or shooting eggs. And so you would create those images in your mind, and so as you go through 1, 2, 3, and you remember the pegs, so 1 is gun, right, 2 is shoe, so maybe I'm imagining drinking milk out of a shoe or a massive shoe made of a milk carton, whatever it is, I can, just by remembering what gun and shoe and so on, I'll remember what the shopping list is. And so I would deliberately use, other people have other techniques like memory palace that I'm sure you might be familiar with.
What about association, memory by association? For example, can you recall names of people that you say you met 20 years ago and you meet them in the street? Oh, I've forgotten what his name is. Or how do you do that?
I'm quite good with names when I meet people. But when it comes to long distance, a long time, then I tend to start failing a little bit. And there are many techniques, and one of the techniques that people teach for remembering names is to try and remember a feature of someone and think of what their name could sound like that you could imagine something with their face. Do you have a technique?
Yes. Now, for example, you know, there used to be in Johannesburg years and years ago when Springbok Radio started, I don't know if you remember Springbok Radio, a trio called Test the Team. There was Eric Rosenthal, there was Professor Arthur Blexley, and there was another gentleman, and I'll give you how I come to his name, and say you've forgotten his name, and I think, oh yes, of course, I look at a light bulb, a globe. His name was Dennis Glober. You see, you're associating it with like that. Mm. Now, what I do is, my technique is this, that every evening before I go to sleep, I try and remember every single incident that took place the whole day, from the moment I woke up until I put my head on that pillow. Now, a lot of people think it takes hours. It doesn't. It takes a few minutes. You know, the brain is mightier than the computer, and it stores everything. So I can recall every single moment right until I go to sleep. And once it's there, it's never gone. It's there forever. And then if I need it, I just recall it. And that's a technique. Now, I've always advised all my listeners to do this. Try and do it. It'll take a few, maybe a couple of days, just to get into the habit of it. And it doesn't take hours. It takes a few seconds. And you'll be able to recall everything you've done. From the moment you wake up, what you did. We're now in the Gaivik studio. I'll be able to tell you later on exactly this whole conversation that we're having now, ad verbatim. Right. Now, I'm going to put out a question to the listeners, because this is very important. We were talking, I mentioned about the atomic bomb. The first atomic bomb dropped in 1946 on the 6th of August was from a B-52 bomber. I want to ask the listeners out there, what was the name of the bomber called? They called it a name after the pilot's mother. So if you do know, you can text 34519, or you can call us on 074-654-7735. What was the name of the bomber, named after the pilot's mother, the first atomic bomb to be dropped over Hiroshima in 1946? So if you do know, please text 34519. Would you know? Could you remember?
Yeah, I'm racking my brain. Obviously, I wasn't around at that time. Oh, but was it not? I don't want to give it away if I am right, though, because you've just asked the question.
No, it doesn't matter.
I think it was something called, oh, this won't be right. Something like Cookie or Sunny.
No. So we're waiting for one of our listeners or somebody. Enola Gay. The Enola Gay. There we are. See? That is, the pilot's mother was called Enola Gay. They dropped the first bomb. Right. So as we said, we're talking all about memory and now influence. We're going to come back to that in a moment. We're going to take a break and we'll be straight back.
He's called the walking human encyclopedia, but here at Chai FM, you know him as Isaac Resnick. For a nostalgic walk down memory lane, catch Isaac Resnick Friday mornings at 9 a.m. And for the lowdown in the community, be sure to stay tuned for Talk of the Town, Tuesday mornings at 9 a.m.
Welcome back. If you just tuned in, we're talking to Gilan Gork all about mentalists, influence, memory. So now let's ask Gilan, how do you now describe and influence people?
Well, I'm passionate about influence. I think that influence as a skill, and again, I use that word because it's not just a gift that people have. A lot of people think that others are born with a trait, that they're either influential or they're not. And the truth is that anyone can learn to be influential. There are guiding principles that you can learn. And I'm passionate about this because really, if you take a step back and think of any area of your life, whether it's at home with the family, whether it's in the community, whether it's in business, no matter what it is, sports, hobbies, if we want to succeed, if we really want to take things to the next level, we need to rely on other people. There are other people, for example, in business, other people who lift us up to success, other people who support us. With family, obviously, you want to be able to influence. So our effectiveness in every area of our life can be amplified and increased, can be taken to the next level when we're able to positively and ethically influence the people around us. So that's why I'm passionate about it, and that's why I do so much teaching on influence to companies. And typically I'll teach people slightly different type of influence techniques than what a mentalist may use on stage. Although obviously as a mentalist, I do demonstrate these as part of my talks for fun and to help people understand, but really practical influence techniques that you'll be able to use in your life to be able to, get people to, get buy-in and agreement from people more often, to be able to inspire them to move in certain directions. And so that's really the influence that I've
now is
on.
Your influence in certain age groups, or is it across the board? Like talking to youngsters about, say, 9, 10, 11, going right through to adults. Where do you find more of the influence then?
Really, my core focus is influence in adults, and that's probably because I'm hired by companies and that's the focus. It's really about how do we increase our bottom line in business by being able to become more positively influential with clients, colleagues, whatever the context may be. But these principles are really universal principles that can apply to children as well, maybe in slightly different ways. And of course, the younger the child is, and perhaps they're a little bit emotionally immature, that perhaps you need a different angle. But you can still see how these often play a part, even in influencing children and teenagers.
As you know, they say that if you take a child of 3 years old, and once you've got him, you've got him for life. Once you've influenced him for life. But now tell me, influence can be used for good or for bad.
Absolutely.
And you've got to be very, very careful. You've got to draw the line. You've got to know how.
Yeah.
Because you may have the bad experience and you pass it on over to someone else. And then they adopt that experience. I've had that happen quite a few times when people come to me and they've told me certain things. I said, but where did you get that from? Oh, they were told this by that person or that person. And then they can't get it out of their mind. It's actually affected them. What is your thought about that?
Yes. You know, when my book was published 2015, with the title of Persuasion Games, you know, people immediately came up to me and said, well, what are the ethics behind this? you know, you're talking about influencing and persuading people and giving all of these psychological principles and so on. And really, it's quite simple, Isaac. The way that I see it is like this. We have words like manipulation, which typically if you hear that, you would immediately imagine a bad thing, right? It has negative connotations. Manipulation, persuasion, influence. But let me ask you this question. If you saw a mother manipulating her child to look both ways before crossing the road safely, what would you think about that? Would you think twice about that?
Definitely, I'd think twice about that.
And what are your thoughts?
Because then they're not giving the child, the person, independence of thought. Because that child will always be brought up for the rest of its life or whatever it is. Oh, it's got to have this, this mother who's, there's a special word for it in a moment, the cautious mother all the time. And it doesn't become independent, definitely.
Well, I think at a certain age, perhaps, yes. But as a really young child who could be in danger, and the mother is obviously trying to get the child to look both ways, if the mother has pure intentions...
Yeah, that's correct.
Then and obviously assuming that it is appropriate for a child of that age to, you know, who's pretty helpless, you don't just want them to walk across the road being oblivious that there are cars on the tarmac. So the truth is that it's like a surgeon's knife. Influence. It can be used for great good
or
for great evil. It depends on the person using that tool. It depends on the moral fiber and the character of those people. So the acid test is that if you're creating win-win situations, then that is good positive influence. And the greatest leaders do this. Whereas if you're creating a win-lose situation, and typically it is the manipulator in the negative sense, it's their goal to be the winner and the other person to be the loser, that would be negative influence. And then it'll come back to bite you.
Do you remember, do you recall the name Ron Hubbard?
Is he not Scientology?
Scientology. Yeah, yeah. And he used influence for the incorrect way. He influenced people, and a lot of them could never get out. They get in. Caught in this net which he set up, and he started this Church of Scientology. I'm not going into that.
It's a long conversation, yeah.
That, but people became so badly influenced by him that they formed sects, and there was one that took place in the United States many years ago when the whole sect committed suicide. The whole, about 20 or 30 of them, because he had influenced them so badly. And then, of course, there's the other influence, those people who tell you to give money over to a church, and it doesn't really, it's not really genuine. And that was Ron Hubbard, you know. Mm. But then there was the opposite one to him, Dale Carnegie. Do you remember Dale Carnegie?
How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Yes. Sure. By the way, what is your book? Is it available?
My book,
yes.
Persuasion Games? Yes, it's available at Exclusive Books. But if you're in South Africa, just hop onto my website, which is gilangork.com, and we deliver it anywhere within just a few days. You can get it
right
to your doorstep.
Okay, mm-hmm. I'm going to try and get a copy of your book. Okay.
Wonderful.
Right. So we're going to take a break now. We'll come back in a few moments.
A walk down memory lane with our very own Jewish encyclopedia. It's Talk of the Town with Isaac Resnick, only on your station, 101.9 Chai FM.
Welcome back. We're talking to Gilan Gork all about mentalism and influencing people. Now, Gilan, what about influencing religious people? Have you had any problems with that? Let's talk, say, in the Jewish community, the Haredi community. Or has there been any problems there with it?
When you say problems, you mean if I'm presenting?
Yes. So,
look, I've never had any issues, no matter how religious an audience is, Jewish or any other religion.
But have you had a religious audience?
Yes.
A strict Orthodox religious audience?
Yeah, sure.
And what was the...
Really, it's fine. So long as I make it clear and set the expectation for what I'm about to present. And like you say, I do need to demystify it a little bit just so that people don't think that I'm dabbling in things that are against their beliefs. Which genuinely I'm not, so it's never a problem. And really, you know, when I present my mentalist shows, for example, I have what I call the mentalist experience. It's an hour of me calling people up from the audience, people selected at random by throwing, say, a paper ball behind me and so on. They would come up and we just do really fun interactive things where they can see how I can read what they they're thinking. Now, it's not like I'm divulging their deepest, darkest secrets either. So, you know, religious audiences, they feel quite comfortable because I'll have them think of a word that's something neutral and then try read it from them. Similar to what I did with you with the number, but obviously it can get a little bit more complex, you know, in the show itself. So really it's, I've never had an issue with anyone who's been offended by it or felt that it was against their beliefs or that there was an invasion of mental privacy or any of that. And, they're actually very intelligent audiences, which works really well because that's a fit with the kind of entertainment that I get.
Have you ever had a call by a married couple who are having problems with their marriage and they've asked you to come and influence one or the other on the other side?
You mean like the posters on the street signs that says marriage problems, contact Gilan Gork mentors? Yes. No, that's not what I do. And you won't find those street signs anywhere.
No, but I'm just
saying. No, I don't. You know, I do receive a lot of requests from people who do have personal private issues. And this has ranged over the years, anything from missing people. And I've had desperate parents calling me, wanting to find their children, sometimes years after the children have gone missing. It's heartbreaking. I have people who are really desperate for money. They want lotto numbers and a lot of things. And I think people, in a way, misunderstand what it is that I do. I'm not a therapist. I don't offer counseling. If I ever did offer one-on-one sessions, maybe it would be more in a coaching environment to do with business. But yeah, I do find people who maybe misunderstand what I do and then come and ask me for that. So I don't give marriage counseling. That's not the field that I'm in. But I would say that influence, would be a major part of any successful relationship, to have healthy influence between both couples.
Right. And what about schools? Have any of the schools ever asked you to come there to help influence children who have learning difficulties?
Well, just earlier this year, I presented for the school's business managers association. There was anyone from principals to, leaders at the schools and they said this is so, so relevant. I presented a talk on the 6 universal principles of influence. And this really applies to absolutely anything. You know, as soon as we finish here, I'm going to a women in leadership conference where I'm presenting it in terms of leadership. But in that context, it was for schools, for them to be able to influence their students. And really, there's such relevance in that. I really wish that when I was in school as well, that I could learn this stuff as a student. And one of my passion projects that I'd really like to start is a program to start teaching influence with children, while they're teenagers, that they'll be able to really understand how to become influential, how to be able to lead people, how to be able to apply influence to business in ways that are going to enrich their lives and the people who they're influencing.
Right. And what about children or even adults with drug problems? Have you been able to help or influence?
Like I said, I don't do counseling of one-on-one.
But
I think that there is a side to influence. I like to call it self-persuasion. And there are certain things that you can do that will help to make that kind of process of recovery a lot easier. So it applies, although that's not something that I focus on.
Yes, because you have this peer group, you know, who influence their friends. And then how is there a way to counteract that? That's the moment.
Well, certainly. If someone, you've got two sides of it. You've got the person who wants to help influence themselves. They realize that they have an issue and they want to take a road to recovery. If they understand the triggers in their minds that will influence them and things that they can do to, flip the right switches that will help them to resolve their situation. That's the one part of it, which is really important. And then the other part of it is people who are trying to support someone who's trying to recover and for them to understand influence so that they can set up the right, anything from the environment to the type of people that they interact with and so on, to try and help that person. So it certainly applies in both those instances.
Right. And to get onto the completely other side, what about sport? Are you able to help anyone influence on sport?
Yes. And, sport is just so much about the mind, and it's about how we influence ourselves, how we think. It's about focus. It's about understanding how to deal with distractions. And so there's a huge interest in sports people and professional sports people to have these types of skills for themselves. And then you've got, if someone is a captain, say, of a team, they also need to be able to influence their players. And so again, we find that even in sports, your effectiveness as a player, especially in team sports, is amplified when you're able to influence the people around you.
Right. So have you had any cases like that where you've had to go and influence for sport?
I haven't come in and worked with an entire team, but I have had sports people come to me and engage with me on a one-on-one basis.
Yeah. Right. We'll take a break. We'll come back in a few moments.
What's going on in the community? Let's find out with Isaac Resnick.
Welcome back. Now, I'm going to put a question out to Gilan, and I'm going to ask him, how would he describe a spiral staircase?
How would I describe a spiral staircase? Wow, what an interesting question, and I'm sure that there's an interesting reason why you're asking it. I would describe a spiral staircase as a staircase that as it ascends, it loops around. Like, am I allowed to use metaphors?
Yeah, or something?
It loops around like a spring would. And as you walk it, you're climbing higher and higher, but you're staying in the same vertical space. I'm not sure if that's a little bit technical, but that's in my mind what makes sense. Why do you ask that?
No, I'll come back to that a little later on. So a spiral staircase is something that starts at the bottom clockwise, and you walk around clockwise till you come to the top. But to go down, you go down anti-clockwise. That is a spiral staircase, because you refer to a spring. Now, a spring has got the same thing as well, because it's also a spiral in its way. Now, why I ask that is a lot of people, when they speak, they use their hands and to try and get a message over, and they talk in that. I don't know if you notice, I've been sitting with you now for an hour. Not once have I used my hands to speak or to get a message or word over or anything. And I notice, and I'm not talking about you particularly, I notice a lot of people when they come into the studio and they're talking, they're using their hands all over. People get onto a platform and some top speakers in the world use their hands all the time. Why is it necessary to use your hands when you're speaking? Can't you use, you know, just talk normally and try and influence that way?
Yeah, great question. And I must say, I haven't received this question before, which is fantastic. And this would be my answer. I do use my hands a lot when I speak. If you see me on stage, and although when I have my talks on stage, I have trained myself to use hand gestures in a way that are not a distraction. You find some people get these, you know, they're pacing up and down the stage and they've got these big hand gestures, or that they're just repeating over and over and over, and that can actually become a distraction. Hand gestures are excellent for emphasis and for driving home certain points. Now, we're on radio here, and so a huge amount of influence comes from our voice. And that's a whole conversation in itself, how to use one's voice to be able to influence. What I would say is that body language, even if you're on the radio, even if you're, let's say, on a phone call, have you noticed how some people, when they're on the phone, they prefer to stand up and walk? They got to get that activity going because it gives energy, right? If, let's say, you were in a call center and you had a headset on, that you got the microphone, it's hands-free, or if you got one of your hands-free sets on, if you wanted to have more influence in your voice, then you can use your body language to give it. The person will never see the body language you're using. But if you wanted to drive a point, now you see I'm busy smashing my one hand with the other, that just gives that energy. And so you can actually use your body language. If I wanted to feel more powerful, I would maybe use a power pose while I'm speaking on the phone, either with my hands on my hips the way I'm doing now, or if I was seated, maybe I would put my hands behind my head, and maybe my feet up, which is what I like to call power wings, because it looks like you've got wings on the side of your head with your elbows. But your body language can still influence the way that you speak. And so top speakers will use body language and they'll gesticulate with their hands quite a lot to try and drive home a point and to create impact.
Yes, I know. I've noticed some of the world leaders using their hands all the time.
Yeah.
But there's one particular gentleman who's internationally known. I'm sure you've heard of him. And that's the Chief Rabbi Emeritus Lord Jonathan Sachs.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever heard
sure.
him speak?
Sure.
Have you ever heard, seen him use
not
his
live, hands? Not live, not live. The, yeah.
But never uses his hands. And is a brilliant speaker, gets the message over. And I just want to come back to something else. We used to have a chief rabbi here called Louis Rabinowitz in the 1950s, 40s, 50s, who was voted one of the best speakers in the world, one of the top speakers in the world, eloquent speaker. Never used his hands once. Mm. Unbelievable. But he could command an audience of 1,000 people. You could hear a pin drop. He was so forceful when he spoke. You can actually, you could hear a pin drop.
Mm.
Never used his hands. It's what we, you said, it's his voice.
Yeah.
The way he spoke. The way he, he'd look at the audience, just look around and then emphasize something, say something else. And that's what it was. And that's where I learned that from him. That is, never use your hands. Try and use your voice. Try and influence. And of course, if we're on radio and you're using your hands, nobody sees you, nobody knows. Of course, you're on television, it's a different story.
Mm.
And I've watched a lot of people who interviewers on television using their hands all the time. And I find that very, very distracting when they're interviewing people. So I just want to thank, I don't know what your thoughts are about that, Gillan, for coming in. Just to remind you, we have the reflections of the past Friday morning between 9 and 10. I'm going to talk about Minnie and Louis Gasalto, who just celebrated their 75th wedding anniversary. Got another a couple of other items to talk about as well. Sunday afternoon, between 4 and 5, we have the Art of the Cantor. And I just want to thank DJ Flo for controlling this morning and for having Gillan coming in and your assistant, and to wish you well and atzlocha and brocha. I was really very impressed with this interview this morning. It was absolutely outstanding. So go well, Gillan, and everything of the best, and enjoy the rest of the day.
Thank you, Isaac. You too.